I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Just ahead, Back Talk, where we hear from you. But first, it's time for Barbershop, where the guys talk about whatever's in the news and whatever's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, sports writer Terrence Harris, blogger and writer Michael David Cobb Bowen, and syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete. I may jump in once or twice, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Hey, hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
In the house.
Chilling, great, man. Chilling.
All right. Well, once again, unfortunately, we have to open up the shop with some bad news. 19-year-old Robert Hawkins walked into a mall in Omaha and shot 8 people at random before killing himself. He left a suicide note with his landlady apologizing and saying, well, now he'd be famous. Our condolences, of course, go out to the victims of this tragedy. Now, Ruben, this young man had an AK-47. How can we strengthen the gun laws and not encroach upon our right to bear arms?
Well, I tell you, there's a lot going through this story, a lot of threads, and one of them, you're right, is the gun laws, and let's just take that on. You need to make it more difficult for people, as best you can, for people to get this kind of heavy artillery. But my problem with attacking it that way only, exclusively, is it lets the parents off the hook, it lets society off the hook. The story keeps replaying itself over and over again. There's something going on with young people, and that means that their parents and the rest of us have to get involved and figure that out.
I'm 38 years old, and I've never touched a gun. I don't understand kids and guns, period, and when it's ever even necessary to put a gun in a child's hand. I mean, I think we got to get rid of that mentality, you know, get rid of that curiosity. I mean, the whole nine, because it just bothers me.
Wow.
Well, it's interesting. Well, I mean, in my neighborhood, the only people that had guns, because I grew up in the city, were really the cops and the robbers. And so I never had the context for responsible gun use. And I always used to, you know, jack on the NRA. But in fact, you know, the NRA was supervising us, and they actually made it to the point where it was so safe that it got boring. And you shoot 50 shots with a rifle, and it gets boring, and you're like, okay, what's the big deal here?
You know, what interests me about the 4 men accused of shooting Sean Taylor in Florida, they're being held right now in Florida, is that the gunman is the youngest cat. He's 17 years old, and he may be charged as an adult. And the other piece that's interesting to me is that what some thought was a byproduct of Taylor's alleged thug life appears to have been just kind of a burglary gone bad. Now, what do we make of that? I mean, Terry, you know what? Your brother from another mother, Jason Whitlock, he said early in the game that the Taylor incident looked to him like another case of what he called the black KKK striking again. Now, you think that was accurate?
No, I mean, and obviously he was wrong for that, and everyone else who jumped the gun on that, they were wrong as well. But I mean, but there's some context to it as well. I mean, Sean had some issues, you know, some years back where he'd had some problems like that. So it seemed like that could have been a problem. But what you run into there, and that's the thing that you can't cross that line, is you just can't make that type of assumption when someone dies that, you know, it was because of his background or his life. I mean, you have to let this thing play out. And I think, you know, some of us really got a little bit ahead of ourselves there, and my boy Jason did too.
Wait a minute, but the basic facts were true. I mean, he said, look, chances are 9 times out of 10, this is a black-on-black thing. And he was right about that.
Right,
yeah,
I mean,
you know,
but Michelle, I think he was right about that piece, but I think his underlying thesis was that, you know, this was Sean Taylor's life coming to catch up with him, that something he had done had precipitated this. And I think that's what Jason was trying to say. Kopsky?
No, there's no cosmic justice here, and Whitlock jumped the gun. I mean, that was a stretch. I mean, it's true that, you know, Taylor had his problems in life, and you're never far from the Michael Vick story here of pro athletes hanging out with gangster folks. But when I think about if this is going to be a black-on-black thing, we know that, you know, race is a kind of self-selecting thing. You decide if you're in the race. And I say, if those 4 gunmen, robbers, if that gets to represent black, then I'm not that kind of black. And if I get to represent black, then they're not black like me. So I don't buy this black-on-black crime thing. It's a crime. And those knuckleheads deserve to pay what they're going to get for.
Ruben, how do you read it?
Well, listen, I want to plead guilty myself, because I think that I didn't go down the Whitlock way of making this black on black, but I talked about professional athletes. And I think Michelle jumped on me appropriately to say, hey, wait a minute. You know, this kid doesn't look like he had that kind of trouble magnet background. But my point was, just forget about the black-on-black crime thing. Talk about professional athletes. They have, for better or for worse, this reputation from various sports of getting into a lot of trouble. And so I want to just apologize and plead guilty, because just because I said that people do that is no excuse for me to do it. You know, just because that's an existing narrative is no excuse for me to feed the narrative.
Let me just pause right here to say, I'm Michelle Martin, and if you just joined us, you're listening to Jimmy Israel, Ruben Navarrete, Terrence Harris, and Michael David Cobb Bowen. There in the barbershop. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Let's switch gears for a moment if we can. Now, Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney is catching heat for hiring a landscaping company that used illegal aliens, despite some assurances otherwise. He's since fired them. Now, Cobb, is this an honest mistake being blown out of proportion?
Well, you know, mispresenting himself as a businessman and not a politician as usual, somebody who knows how to handle their business. And, you know, with a name like Mitt, you think you wouldn't drop the ball.
Not bad. Not bad.
But he dropped the ball twice.
That was good.
Twice. Mm-hmm. And this is no excuse. This is a black mark on his record. Sorry.
Ruben, is this going to affect his candidacy?
It really should. It really should. And not because of the blatant hypocrisy of going out there and scoring points 1 minute on the backs of illegal immigrants, sort of coming off as the tough guy in this race. And then this sort of stuff comes out about you. The hypocrisy is bad enough, but the real reason I think he should pay for this is because he's been trying to package himself to these conservative Republican voters in Iowa who legitimately care about the illegal immigration issue as a top issue, as sort of, you know, I hear you, I feel your pain, you know, I'm with you, your concerns are my concerns, your causes are my causes. And now we finally figure out that he doesn't take this cause very seriously, because he not only was hired this company to do his landscaping, but even after the story broke a year ago, he didn't let go of the company. He kept the company until this week, which is really the foul of it. So,
I know, don't you think that's funny? Don't you think that's weird, though? Why do you think he didn't fire him?
A couple reasons. I think
I'm sure they do a heck of a job.
I was going to say. I'm
sure they do. I'm sure. Yeah. Good help is hard to find. And also, who's to say that if he didn't go find another landscaping company, they weren't going to have the same problem? So they probably thought about all those same situations. And he said, you know, gave him a second chance and all that. But I'm sorry, it just doesn't ring true. He fired these people only after the Boston Globe called this week to tell Mitt Romney they were running another story. At that point, he fired them.
I thought he really asked an important question when he asked, you know, so if you hear somebody in your yard with a strange accent, what do you just run out, you know, to immigration and try to bust them out? I mean, how do you police something like this? I don't know. For me, it looked like it's embarrassing, but yeah, I mean, maybe he should have known, but I mean, doesn't he have better things to do than check the accents of his yard help? Terry,
yeah, apparently.
Exactly. Where does this end? I mean, are we, is he going to be responsible for the people at the grocery store as well? I mean, he was doing business with these people. These people weren't employed by him. I mean, they weren't on his payroll. He wrote a check. I mean, how is he responsible for this?
The point is, if you're going to take this issue on and tell everybody what they're supposed to do, I think it points out just how much a part of the economy undocumented workers are. You know what I mean? It's just not that easy. I think Ruben's point is that on the campaign trail, he acts like this is easy. But in real life, it's not easy.
That's right. It also points to the hypocrisy. You know, the reason that Larry Craig became an issue was because this was a conservative Republican who had railed against gay rights. And so there's kind of an irony there. And likewise, you know, the reason that we were all of a sudden concerned about whether Strom Thurmond may have had African-American relatives in his history was because he was a segregationist. There's a lot of Americans out there who hire illegal immigrants either directly or indirectly, but not all of them are running for president on the backs of illegal immigrants.
You know what? I'm curious to see how he's going to handle it going forward. It's hot where he is. It's muy caliente, but we'll just have to hold our breath and see how he does with this. Now, you know what? Your boy Jesse Jackson Jr. Now, he takes on his father. He takes him to task in a letter to the editor in the Chicago Sun-Times. Now, Jesse Jr. says senior's criticisms of Barack Obama's commitment to Black America are misguided. Now, I don't know, Terry, was it right for Jr. to air out his dad on the Ed page? What's up with that?
Oh, yes. I mean, definitely. I mean, because I don't expect him as a representative to have to agree with everything his dad does or says. I mean, I don't think it was disrespectful. I think, like he said, you know, he said something about the thunder strikes again. And in this situation, I mean, thunder was wrong. Jesse probably has some issues with Obama. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, Junior likes him.
Yeah. Right. I wondered if this was a discussion between, you know, a father and son and not necessarily something to be hashed out on the Ed page. I mean, Kopsky, how do you see about that?
Oh, it's what good. It's good. It should be hashed out on the Ed page. I think Junior represents, you know, our generation. And there's a second generation of black politics, and we're not necessarily happy to see, you know, even moral leaders like Jackson Sr., but we want to see people who are competent insiders, professionals, the Harold Fords, the guys who can go out there and say, I am an insider, I have the power, I gained it, you know, the good old-fashioned way by appealing to a broad variety of voters. And that's a new generation. It's a new kind of power in African-American politics.
Now, Ruben, what about that? You think Junior had something there by saying that, you know, Jesse Jackson Sr. Shouldn't be poking elbows at Barack Obama?
I think he did have something there. And here's what this is really about. The criticism that Jackson launched against Obama is that Obama should have been more vocal over Gina, and he should be more vocal on civil rights issues. He should run essentially as an African-American candidate, like Jesse did twice before in 1984 and 1988.
Right.
Jesse ran for president as a black candidate. And now you have, I think, running through Jackson Sr., a lot of jealousy because he sees someone like Barack Obama, and he's envious of the fact that he's on the cover of Time magazine. He's leading in Iowa. People are talking about Barack Obama becoming the Democratic nominee. Some people are even talking about him becoming elected president. That was never a conversation we were having about Jesse Sr. What Junior is saying is, look, the candidate could get hooked up on Gina and housing laws and all this stuff, but Dad, what would it mean to elect an African American president? Okay, and do you really want to blow that over this other stuff? I mean, if he becomes president, I have no doubt that he'll do the right thing on the Ginas of the world.
Right. I think Jesse's just trying to pretend as if he's relevant. You know what? And Reverend Jackson, if you're listening, bro, don't play a hate. Congratulate.
I'll forward him your email so he can respond directly, Jimmy.
And gentlemen, with that, it's a wrap. Gotta kick it over to the lady of the house.
Jimmy Israel joined us from WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida, where he's a freelance writer and reporter. Ruben Navarrete joined us from KPBS in San Diego. He writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. Terrence Harris joined us from KUHF in Houston. He's a sports writer for the Houston Chronicle. And Michael David Cobb Bowen is a blogger and founder of the Conservative Brotherhood. He joined us from NPR West. You can find links to all of our barbershop guests at our website, npr.org/tellmemore. Gentlemen, thanks so much for coming to the shop today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yep, yep.